The more that supply chain grew, the more Walton and Glass understood that scale and efficiency were the keys to their whole business. Put simply, the more scale and scope their supply chain had, the more things they sold for less to more customers, the more leverage they had with suppliers to drive prices down even more, the more they sold to more customers, the more scale and scope their supply chain had, the more profit they reaped for their shareholders. Sam Walton was the father of that culture, but necessity was its mother, and its offspring has turned out to be a lean, mean supply chain machine. In 2004, Walmart purchased roughly $260 billion worth of merchandise and ran it through a supply chain consisting of 108 distribution centers around the United States, serving the some 3,000 Walmart stores in America. In improving its supply chain, Walmart leaves no link untouched. In 1983, Walmart invested in point-of-sale terminals, which simultaneously rang up sales and tracked inventory deductions for rapid resupply. 4 years later, it installed a large-scale satellite system linking all of the stores to company headquarters, giving Walmart's central computer system real-time inventory data and paving the way for a supply chain greased by information and humming down to the last atom of efficiency. Now Walmart, in its latest supply chain innovation, has introduced RFID, radio frequency identification microchips, attached to each pallet and merchandise box that comes into Walmart, to replace barcodes, which have to be scanned individually and can get ripped or soiled. In June 2003, Walmart informed its top 100 suppliers that by January 1, 2005, all pallets and boxes that they ship to Walmart distribution centers have to come equipped with RFID tags. RFID will allow Walmart to track any pallet or box at each stage in its supply chain and know exactly what product from which manufacturer is inside with what expiration date. If a grocery item has to be stored at a certain temperature, the RFID tag will tell Walmart when the temperature is too high or too low. Because each of these tags costs around 20 cents, Walmart is reserving them now for big boxes and pallets, not individual items. But this is clearly the wave of the future. Unfortunately for Walmart, the same factors that drove its instinct for constant innovation, its isolation from the world, its need to dig inside itself, and its need to connect remote locations to a global supply chain, also got it in trouble. I am talking about everything from Walmart's recently exposed practice of locking overnight workers into its stores to its allowing Walmart's maintenance contractors to use illegal immigrants as janitors, to its role as defendant in the largest civil rights class action lawsuit in history, to its refusal to stock certain magazines, like Playboy, on its shelves, even in small towns where Walmart is the only major store. This is all aside from the fact that some of Walmart's biggest competitors complain that they have had to cut healthcare benefits and create a lower wage tier to compete with Walmart, which pays less and covers less than most big companies. But when I asked Walmart's CEO, H. Lee Scott Jr., directly about all these issues, he did not duck. In fact, he wanted to talk about it. What I think I have to do is institutionalize this sense of obligation to society to the same extent that we have institutionalized the commitment to the customer, said Scott. The world has changed, and we have missed that. We believed that good intentions and good stores and good prices would cause people to forgive what we are not as good at, and we were wrong. In certain areas, he added, we are not as good as we should be. Just have to get better. One trend that Walmart insists it is not responsible for is the offshoring of manufacturing. We are much better off if we can buy merchandise made in the United States, said Glass. I spent 2 years going around this country trying to talk people into manufacturing here. We would pay more to buy it here because the manufacturing facilities in those towns would create jobs for all those people who shopped in our stores. But for the most part, people in this country have just abandoned the manufacturing process. They say, I want to sell to you, but I don't want the responsibility for the buildings and the employees and healthcare. I want to source it somewhere else. So we were forced to source merchandise in other places in the world. He added, one of my concerns is that with the manufacturing out of this country, one day we'll all be selling hamburgers to each other. Flattener number 8. Insourcing. What the guys in funny brown shorts are really doing. One of the most enjoyable things about researching this book has been discovering all sorts of things happening in the world around me of which I had no clue. Nothing was more surprisingly interesting than pulling the curtain back on UPS, United Parcel Service. Yes, those folks, the ones who wear the homely brown shorts and drive those ugly brown trucks. Turns out that while I was sleeping, stodgy old UPS became a huge force flattening the world. Nandan Nilekani, the Infosys CEO, who tipped me off to this. FedEx and UPS should be one of your flatteners. They're not just delivering packages, they are doing logistics. He told me on the phone from Bangalore one day. UPS, I learned, was not just delivering packages anymore, it was synchronizing global supply chains for companies large and small. UPS still pulls in most of its $36 billion in sales by shipping more than 13.5 million packages a day from point A to point B. But behind that innocuous facade, the company founded in Seattle in 1907 as a messenger service has reinvented itself as a dynamic supply chain manager. Consider this. If you own a Toshiba laptop computer that is under warranty and it breaks and you call Toshiba to have it repaired, Toshiba will tell you to drop it off at a UPS store and have it shipped to Toshiba, and it will get repaired and then be shipped back to you. But here's what they don't tell you. UPS doesn't just pick up and deliver your Toshiba laptop. UPS actually repairs the computer in its own UPS-run workshop dedicated to computer and printer repairs at its Louisville hub. I went to tour that hub, expecting to see only packages moving around, and instead, I found myself dressed in a blue smock in a special clean room, watching UPS employees replacing motherboards in broken Toshiba laptops. Toshiba had developed an image problem several years ago, with some customers concluding that its repair process for broken machines took too long. So, Toshiba came to UPS and asked it to design a better system.